In the summer of 1978, the small village of Soldiers Grove in southwestern Wisconsin was hit with the worst flooding in the community's history. It destroyed several buildings, including a new bank, and caused $500,000 in damage.
That event is ultimately what caused leaders to relocate the downtown area and several homes to higher ground. But perhaps the bigger success story, according to our next guest, is how the village did it. She said other communities that experience frequent and severe flooding can learn from Soldiers Grove, especially in the era of climate change.
Alexandra Tempest is the associate editor of The Progressive, which recently released a special edition focused entirely on climate change. Allie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Rob. I'm glad to be here.
Well, take us back 40 years. Soldiers Grove, before this big flood hit, there were no strangers to flooding. Give us a little of their story.
Yeah, no, that's correct. Soldiers Grove is a tiny village. At its height, it had about 700 people. It's nestled in, it's really idyllic land in the Driftless region of Wisconsin. So there's these ridges, and it's right on the shores of the Kickapoo River. You know, for most of its history, well, for the first 50 years or so, founded in 1856, for those first 50 years or so, there wasn't a whole lot of flooding, not a lot of community memory of flooding until about the turn of the century. And it turns out that a lot of this industrial development, things like farming, logging, paving, made it easier to flood. The ground wasn't capturing as much water. It was cascading into the river. Floods started happening. So then the village adapted to this lifestyle where every year, every fall, every spring even, they would experience a flood, and sometimes they would be minor, sometimes they would be historic, like in 1951, 1978, where people would have to evacuate their homes from second-story windows, and even in the earlier years, would just get in the habit of, well, flood's coming, we have to empty out our storefronts, we have to empty out our homes and make sure that everything's prepared for the flooding, and then, you know, they'd get everybody on down to help, and then they'd bring stuff back in, and it was just a part of life.
And you write that leading up to this big flood in 1978, people in the area started to come up with a plan. The usual state of the art with flooding was you fight it. You build flood walls. You try to prevent the water from hitting you. They started developing a different, crazy plan, I think people thought at the time, move the community.
That's right. Yeah. So federal policy up until this point had really favored structural approaches to flooding. So things like levees and walls and dams, things like that to mitigate flooding. But what this town had experienced was this, a year after year repeated events. And we know from the research that when things are repeated, people are more likely to think, well, maybe I should leave or maybe I should move. So people were, the town started exploring this idea of moving to higher ground.
And it can be tough to make a decision like this. It can be tough for a community to, change the parade route on 4th of July, much less move their entire community. And that's part of what you focus on, the process and community buy-in.
Yeah, really, what the research says is that these programs are successful when they are community-driven, when they come from the ground up. There was a lot of footwork that had to be done ahead of time to sort of, spend time with the community, have these village meetings, have a, door-to-door survey, asking folks what they wanted of their new relocated town. It took time to change hearts and minds. It was, as you said, this kind of relocation approach. Previously, the Army Corps of Engineers had really considered relocation sort of socially unacceptable. It was a non-starter. There had been relocations before this time, but none that was really a bottom-up, driven, government-funded relocation program that was funded by these home and business buyouts. They were pioneers in this respect. Then it turns out that once they did it, people started pointing to Soldiers Grove as an example of how this could happen. This could actually work.
Talk about the outcome. What did Soldiers Grove, the new moved Soldiers Grove, look like?
So, yeah, it's still to this day kind of this bifurcated village. There's the old town down in the original 1850s location with the traditional architecture, and a lot of that is very residential. There's not a lot of business because they moved the central business district up and around the corner and onto a, you know, the side of a ridge there. And in that new area is sort of all of the buildings have the same style, the same look. They have this wood siding and they have these solar paneled roofs, and that's kind of what the town became known for, and what it got a lot of national attention for at the time was this solar town, effort to use solar panels to power the town. So that was a big part of the story. But really, they became known for, among people who study, natural disasters and flood mitigation for their relocation, in the longer term.
Talking to Alexandra Tepes from Progressive Magazine, talking about her piece on Soldiers Grove and how they moved after a flood 40 years ago. And there's a reason you're looking at this now, Allie, in the time of climate change. Why is it important to look at this example from Soldiers Grove?
Well, Soldiers Grove really became the model that was pointed to by experts. So, for example, in 1993, the Great Flood of 1993 that spanned six states across the Mississippi River, the Association of State Floodplain Managers pointed to Soldiers Grove. They went to Congress, to the Clinton administration, to government agencies, and they said, hey, look at what happened in this small town in Wisconsin. They relocated. They did it. And then, over time, because of the example that Soldiers Grove, was, these about 12,000 or so communities, and we're not talking municipalities necessarily, but communities along the Mississippi ended up moving and relocating. And Soldiers Grove, as an example, was a big part of that. And so now we're dealing with increasing flood events. And, going back to industrial development that started the floods back in, turn of the 20th century, now industrial development is, exacerbating flooding by contributing to warming and climate change. And so now we're seeing warmer atmosphere. Clouds can hold more moisture. We get heavier and more intense rains, more unpredictable floods. And that's just one climate impact. I mean, you can look to California to see what's happening out there with the fires, and people are in Paradise, California are considering, should I move back to my town that doesn't exist anymore? We're really looking at Soldiers Grove as an example of why or how relocation can work. So there are lots of, in the age of climate change now, there are lots of communities that are considering moving back, coastal communities moving back from the shore, towns that are on rivers like Soldiers Grove having to move. There's buyout programs that fund relocations in every state in the country. And these are used in the wake of Hurricane Sandy in New York. They were used in the wake of Hurricane Harvey and Katrina, but also just in towns that are experiencing slow moving sea level rise, like in Alaska and Louisiana. So this is something that's only going to get more and more relevant and to the world that we're living in.
You say we're doing this in all 50 states now. Are we doing it enough? Are we planning enough? Do we have the resilience in place to allow a community threatened by flooding or other climate change outcome? Are we ready to do this a lot?
Well, that's a good question. Right now, I spoke to Housing and Urban Development, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, back in 2016. So this is prior to the Trump administration. And they, actually said they were kind of hesitant to use this word, but they did say these people are climate refugees at this, so they acknowledge the seriousness of the situation. At the same time, they're very hesitant to want a direct mass migration from the top down. And relocation and, moving people around is politically very sensitive. Municipalities don't want to lose their tax base. And, we don't want to be telling people where they should live and where they can and cannot live. But it's also We do know that it's going to be necessary. Climate change is making certain places in this country uninhabitable, and most climate migration happens within country borders, not across country borders. So we need to, and this is what the experts have identified, is we need to find a set of best practices and standards for deciding how to best implement these programs, because right now how it works is the federal government just gives funds to states and municipalities and then just lets them design their own programs without having a set of best practices in place.
We'll leave it there for now. Allie, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rob.
That's Alexandra Tempest from the Progressive Magazine talking about her piece on the recovery of Soldiers Grove after a severe flood and how it can be a model for communities around the nation.
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, the IRS has seen years of budget and staffing cuts. According to a new report, that means fewer audits of wealthy people and lots of unpaid taxes. A co-author of the report gives us details.
And on this week's edition of Food Friday, it's time to make some holiday desserts with chocolate recipes, scones, and more. Join the fun and share your favorites, that and more, coming up tomorrow on Central Time.